Hello and welcome to Everything in Between, the podcast where a dad and daughter duo delve deep into topics ranging from true crime to paranormal occurrences to urban legends and, well, everything in between. I'm Emma.
I'm the dad.
That's Anish. And this week we're recording up in Maine and on a Sunday.
Shocking.
It is very shocking. Very shocking. Let's see. How's your week been?
Well, first, I just want to thank everybody because they sent a whole, like, we got probably our best feedback
from this the past logos and or the episode.
The episode,
yeah,
was really cool because and we kind of, you know, we didn't wing it, but because we both had done so much research on the story,
we didn't like prepare.
Well, we didn't do the same, you know, hours of research. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know I do hours of research.
I do hours of research.
Okay. Anyway, but
we literally copied all the information into a document like 5 minutes before we started recording. So,
but it was cool because I liked the back and forth. It was kind of fun.
Yeah. So we might do another episode like that in the future.
Yeah, let we could probably do one on like Bundy or we haven't done Bundy, right?
No, we've not done Bundy. We've not done any of like the
Son of Sam.
That's what I was about to say. Wasn't that yesterday the anniversary of when he was caught?
It might have been.
It was very recent.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I got it in my dictionary, or not dictionary, history.com, this day in history.
But to segue into
the logo. One more thing to say, though, about the story. We actually had some people send in their stories, their own personal, like, stuff.
Oh, yeah, good shout-out.
When our episode went out, and we were like, oh, send us stories. People actually did start sending us stories.
That's right, so, yeah. We have a new listener or listeners in Canada. So
yeah.
That was really cool. We have to actually clear before we can use their name. So we should ask that first. Yeah. But we're very happy. So thank you, Canada.
Yes. Woohoo, Canada. Send in your stories.
Yep. Actually, the fans of Canada have some incredible
crimes.
Well, just that list that was sent and just, yeah. And then there's like a,
I only recognize like two on that list, and one of them was my favorite, of course, the Ken and Barbie Killers.
Yeah.
Then
segue into the logos.
Yes, people loved them, which is awesome. And we did say in our post that maybe if you send us your own little like stories, your own experiences, then maybe you might see one in your future, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I think we have to. We didn't go crazy by ordering. We kind of like just decided.
We only got a few.
Just to first figure out
if people like them. Yeah.
Yeah. So now that we know, and we still have that other design that we have to play with a little bit, which is just a small derivative, but we'll figure it out. But but we don't. No, it's cool. I'm glad that was good. Yeah.
So, you know, now you have another reason to send in your stories. You might get a cool logo thing out of it.
Yeah. True. Yeah.
Let's see. I assume you would like to talk about Liverpool.
The Premier League started on Friday.
Yes.
And we played Norwich again at home. And we won. Woohoo.
Woo.
I'm actually mad because it was 4-1. I mean, it was a good game. I mean, and Norwich is like for real. The score, I mean, it was... The score may seem that we took it to them, but I wouldn't say that. I would say that the goals we scored, we were up 4-0 at the half, and the first goal was actually an own goal. I mean, again, it was deserved the way we were fighting, I think. But then the second half, we should have put at least two, if not maybe even a third away, and credit the keeper, incredible saves. But then they got a goal, and it was a beautiful goal. I mean, it was totally legit and everything, but it just angered me that we let up a goal because we shouldn't have. We should have been, it just seemed that we were in control. We were up by 4. We were like, oh, I'll just see the game out. But we weren't. The intensity was gone. So that can work to our advantage, actually, because you can use that to build that. Like, we can't. Because they just can't do that. Because Man City played the next day and won 5-0. So Man City, again, is on the top of the table by goal differential. United won today 4-0. So they're also above because it comes down to goals. I think it's goals, actually. I don't know how they're going to do that. But but the downside was our keeper got hurt. He just was kicking a goal kick and collapsed. And he first thought somebody had thrown something from the stance that hit him in the calf. It's a calf strain, and he could be out 4 to 8 weeks. And we just signed a brand new keeper this past week. So he came on, and again, he did fine. But it's just one of those things where, you know, you don't plan for these things. You can't plan for them. But yeah, season's on, and I believe it's going to be just as crazy as it was last year. But yeah. So we play on Wednesday again. We got Chelsea, which is not, has nothing to do with Premier League. We play them in the Super Cup because they won Europa and we won Champions. And then we play Southampton this weekend.
Oh.
So a couple more games.
Yeah.
And you'll hear all about it.
Oh, yes, of course. As for movies, we watched The Favourite.
We did. We watched that last night.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it. I did like it, yeah. I just finished The Boys on Amazon. It is, I don't know if, how many people read graphic novels or comic books that people like, you know, to like demean everyone, but there's one author, his name is Garth Ennis, and he did one of my favorite series called The Preacher that they actually did adapt for television. Seth Rogen, who's a huge graphic novel fan, adapted it. And he said when he adapted that show, he was going to do it completely different than the comic book. And I watched like the first season, but I kind of lost interest. And it's true. Like, I don't want to see the exact same thing move from book to screen. So when I heard he was producing The Boys, another one that Garth Ennis had, he was the author, he wrote most of it. I can't remember who did the graphics on the comic book. But I knew a little bit about it. I think I read one, but it was intense. It was crazy. And it's the whole premise is, what if the superheroes are just bad guys, you know, mm-hmm. and they're kind of run by like this corporate entity. And it's well done and it's intense. And I pretty much binge watched it. And I can't wait for the second season already. So, but it's graphic in every possible way.
Oh, wonderful. Is that why you were saying you can't watch this?
Well, I just think also it's one of those things where
you have to watch from the beginning.
Yeah. And I think, I don't know. Like, I don't think you've read any of those types of, like, you haven't read The Preacher or any, you haven't done Sandman. I mean, Sandman isn't graphic in that way, but it's just, I don't know. I just think that, it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe you should read The Preacher and then, if you like that, then you should definitely read some of these other ones because it's not your, I can't remember which one, that one comic book that you love that you keep reading.
Which, Amulet?
No.
Lumberjanes?
Yes.
That's like a kid one. I mean, it is good. I would recommend it.
I just don't think you've read anything with this intensity.
That's not like dark.
Have you read Monstrous? I can't remember if
I did. And I read that one, the one that was like, fairy tales, but like dark.
Oh, Fables.
No, not that one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But that's...
It wasn't like
I know. That was like the adult version of like a fairy tale thing.
That was like, no, what if Red Riding Hood was sexy?
Yeah, this is different. Fables is phenomenal.
Yeah, and then what was the other one that you were reading? Saga? That you liked that
one.
Oh,
did you read that?
No. I haven't read it yet.
All right.
Because you said I couldn't.
Why didn't we bring all those? Actually, yeah, you should... I wish I brought them. You should read those.
When we go home, we can...
You need to get other stuff done before I'm allowed to introduce this to you because you will be done. It's like binge watching shows.
Okay.
But yeah. So if you're into hardcore graphic novels, I recommend The Boys. And if you haven't read The Preacher, please read The Preacher. It is unbelievable. But yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's pretty much. I didn't rent. I just bought, The Changeling, the 1980 movie. That I hope we're going to watch. The growling in the background is Willow because we're in Maine and there are animals frolicking all around. We have basically a...
Didn't you say...
Woodchuck.
Yeah, the woodchuck taunted her today.
Yeah, the woodchuck did taunt her this day. We have woodchucks, we have deer. We actually have a bear. We forgot to say that last week, that a bear came and took our bird feeder, like literally ripped it off and of took it thing. Away. There are
paw prints.
Yeah, paw prints
on the porch, like column.
Yeah, thing. Yeah, because it had to climb. I mean, the
they were like 5 feet up. Those paw prints.
No, it has to be a pretty big bear. But we have that, and then we have a Fisher cat. And if you don't know what a Fisher cat is, look it up because they are just
mean.
Like, I mean, they're like worse than a badger.
They're horrible.
Like the honey badger. I mean, I know honey badger don't care, but my God, fisher cats do care, and they care to kill you.
Yeah. They're mean.
And then, so she's growling back and forth. So just, we apologize for the growling.
Yeah. If you hear that in the background,
yeah,
it might add an air of spookiness to our stories.
Yeah.
Is that it?
You got your schedule.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I got my school schedule, which means that's coming closer and closer, which I'm not quite sure I'm too happy about, but.
You still got time. Still, you know, time.
This time next year, I'm going to probably be packing up for college.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. Enjoy the time you have. Just go with that.
Yeah, I'll try my best.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything else.
Right? Yeah, I think we can get right into it.
All right. Well, what are you doing again?
I'm doing a paranormal story.
All right, sweet. Well, let's hear it.
So, I have no pictures for you this week.
No worries.
They're all on my other computer, and right now I'm using my mom's computer. So let's talk about a place in Key West, Florida.
Okay.
Haunted.
Okay.
A lot of history. We're going to talk about Captain Tony's Saloon.
Captain Tony's Saloon or Captain Tony's Saloon?
Captain Tony's Saloon.
Okay. So the saloon is Captain Tony's.
Yes. It's a saloon of Captain Tony.
Okay.
So the history is that the saloon, well, the building itself was first constructed in 1851, 1852, in Key West, Florida, as an ice house that doubled as a morgue.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense.
Yes, it does.
I just hope they don't mix things up.
Oh God. Yeah, me too. In the 1890s, the building housed a wireless telegraph station that was used heavily during the Spanish-American War. That's cool. Okay. It was very helpful. Great telegraph station. But what?
How do you know it was a great telegraph station?
What do you mean, how do I know?
What does it mean to be a great telegraph station?
It was functional.
Low bar.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I read something about it being... like delivering a very important message, but I didn't
put it in. Mean, okay, clear enough, fair enough. All right.
Yeah. But also it was functional, so that's how you know. So in 1912, the building became a cigar factory before turning into a bordello and a bar, which was favorited by Navy soldiers. However, the bar was forced out of business before long. During Prohibition, the building was used as multiple speakeasies, the last of which was called the Blind Pig. And the Blind Pig specialized in gambling, women, and bootleg rum.
Okay. So,
then, in the 1930s, a local named Josie Russell, who's a guy.
Okay.
I guess.
Yeah,
I didn't,
Josie.
Whatever. We're going to call him Josie because that's
is
what the article
said. J-O-S-E-Y?
No.
How is it spelled?
Like the name Josie.
Like,
but it's a guy.
J-O-S-I-E?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. Joe Russell. Josie. I don't know. Anyway, he bought the building. Yeah. He bought the building, and he turned it into a bar called Sloppy Joe's Bar. Between 1933 and 1937, none other than Ernest Hemingway frequented the bar. Like, he was there pretty much every evening.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking.
Yeah. He tended to do that.
So then in 1938, the landlord was like, hey, I'm going to raise your rent by $1 per week. And Russell was like, no. And so he decided to move the bar to its current location at 201 Duval Street.
Okay.
And so this is a quote from one of the articles. It's going to repeat some of the information, but I thought it was very funny. So in 1938, Josie Russell, in a dispute with the landlord, blah, 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 the lease stated that all the fixtures must stay if he ended the lease. And so Russell decided to move the entire bar in the middle of the night and taking all the fixtures with him. And during the move, Hemingway insisted on possession of the urinal. He said his hard-earned money paid for it. So he has the urinal and it's still in his house. So you can go see it, I guess, if you can go to the house. I don't know.
So how do you get away with taking everything?
I don't know. It reminded me of
Shakespeare,
like, yeah, with the Globe Theater. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the landlord was like, you know, that's fair. That's a big effort right there.
Yes.
Or maybe like Ernest Hemingway was like, hey, this is fine. And the guy was like, okay. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. So next, in 1940, the building was leased to Morgan Bird, who turned it into a gay bar called the Duval Club.
Okay.
Navy soldiers were quickly prohibited from going to the club, and the lack of patrons shut it down. So then, 1958, Captain Tony Terracino, who was a local charter boat captain,
okay,
bought the building and renamed it Captain Tony's Saloon.
All right.
It is said that the singer Jimmy Buffett got a start at the bar, playing there in the 70s in exchange for tequila. Now, when I got to this part in my research, I had thought, like, when I found this, I was like, oh my gosh, one that I've never heard of before, blah, blah, blah. Then when I got to this part, I, like, got a huge flashback to, I was listening to And That's Why We Drink, where they got really off track talking about Jimmy Buffett, which I think might have been for this story, but I'm not 100% sure. But that's the only reason I knew that it was Buffett, not Buffet. So thanks for that. But anyway, a lot of famous people have come to this bar. Truman Capote.
Is Capote. That right?
Capote.
Truman Capote, yeah.
All right. Bob Dylan.
Yep.
Truman
Capote wrote In Cold Blood.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ho, ho, ho. I don't know this next name. Dwayne Cahill?
I don't know.
I don't know. He seems to be a famous person.
Okay.
Tommy Newell.
Yeah.
Harry Truman.
Yeah.
John F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd.
Mm-hmm.
Another person that I didn't put in here, but I can't remember. But there's a bunch of famous people. And they have, in the bar, they have each stool is painted, like the name of a famous person that was there is painted on the stool.
Oh, cool.
So that's cool. Anyway, that little fun fact.
Yeah.
So Captain Tony sold the bar in 1989, but continued to make surprise appearances until his death in 2008.
Okay.
So now it's this guy. I'll talk about the new owner later, but let's talk about some freaky stuff that has gone down in this place.
All right.
So in 1865, a huge hurricane washed an unidentified body to right outside the bar. And the people that found the body were like, oh no, they don't know who this person is. So they sort of buried him. Like, they built a wall around the body and put bottles of holy water inside it. And it stayed there until the 80s, 1980s. I hope it's the 1980s. The article did not tell me.
It may have been the 1880s.
Yeah, it could have been. We'll just go with the 1980s because that sounds more fun.
That's a long time.
Yes, it is. But we're going to go with it. So the bar was largely expanded and they were like, whoa, this skeleton's here. And it became part of the saloon.
Oh, no, it would have been the 1980s then, because the saloon didn't happen until a little bit later. It was something else.
True,
in
but
the 1880s.
I was just referencing it as a bar. Like, it might have been something else. Who knows? It's fine. I thought it meant, like, the 1980s,
yeah.
But who knows? So, also during the expansion, the headstone of a woman named Elvira Edmonds was found, along with the skeletal remains of Elvira Edmonds. She died on the winter solstice at age 19. Kind of sad.
So these things were like hidden somewhere in the, like, I don't understand where a headstone like just appears in out of nowhere.
I was thinking like it was kind of back. Like they turned the whole thing into like a pool room. And like,
no, I understand, but like,
I don't know. Maybe they knew it was there and then they were like,
okay, no, that's fine.
Well, we're going to have to make it into the bar now.
All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
I'm not quite sure, but the grave, you can now see it's exposed in the wall next to a pool table. So while you're playing pool, you can be like, you know, chilling with Elvira.
Hmm.
I don't know.
All right.
And then in the 1980s, specifically in the actual 1980s, quote, while taking up the old plywood flooring, the bones from between 8 to 15 bodies were discovered. And I think it's from when it was the morgue. And then a different article said that it was 15 to 18 bodies.
All right, so here's where I'm confused. I thought the other building was the morgue and... Oh, no, no. He moved into this building. That guy. Okay. Now I get it. I was thinking that you're talking about the same building for the longest time. And then that guy then moved to a new building.
And then I was talking about the new building?
Yeah.
No, the guy who moved into the new building, that new building is Sloppy Joe's.
Oh, so, oh.
The old building.
That's where I missed. I thought that,
my bad.
I thought Sloppy Joe's then got sold to Tony and blah, blah. Okay, no, so
there's still Sloppy Joe's.
So Sloppy Joe's left. And then this building went to...
The empty building.
Okay, now I get it.
Became like the gay bar and then...
Now I understand the bodies. Now the headstones all make sense. Everything makes sense. Okay. I'm a little slow on the uptake. Understood. All right.
No, it's probably my fault.
No. My fault. All right.
Okay. So they thought it was left over from when it was a morgue.
Yep.
Great.
All makes sense.
So...
They're asking for it. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't disturb the dead.
That is true.
You'll hear that in my story.
Ooh, interesting. I'm very intrigued. Anyway, so there's another grave of a woman named Reba Sawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's placed at the foot of a tree that grows through the bar, which I'll talk about later.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah. It's really cool. So allegedly, Reba was cheating on her husband and secretly meeting her lover at Captain Tony's. Her husband didn't even find out about this until after she died, at which point he went to where she was buried, like tugged the headstone up, which it's not a very big headstone. It's like a plaque pretty much.
Right.
He like tugged it from the ground, marched over to Captain Tony's and dumped it inside the bar saying, this is where she wanted to be. So this is where she will stay.
But it was just the headstone.
Yeah, I know. I guess it was like a symbolic thing. He was very angry, apparently.
And probably drunk.
Probably.
Okay.
Maybe he was at Sloppy Joe's. And then...
Yeah, could have been. Well, he is there now, probably. Or was. I mean, he was going to go back to Captain Tony's.
Yeah, there's no way he ever went back there. So, more about the tree. It's growing right through the middle of the building. And actually comes out of the building about, like, 6 inches out of the building. And actually got damaged from Hurricane Irma, but it's fine now.
But it's sealed somehow, so water and things don't come in?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know.
What?
I didn't see any pictures of the ceiling.
It doesn't rain all that much, only during the craziness. So, like, when you have a crazy storm. But, all right, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know. But this tree is very special. It's known as the Hanging Tree. And it was used to execute 17 people. 16 of those people were pirates, and one was a woman.
Wait. The thing was an ice house and a morgue.
Yeah.
And then there was a tree there.
I think that the tree was there before the ice house and the morgue.
Okay.
I don't really know. You'll see at the end, there's this historian guy who, like, weighs in on everything. But for now, we're just gonna pretend it all makes sense.
All right.
Most of these stories really don't make sense if you think about them too hard.
I feel like this is just the lore to have people come visit Captain Tony's.
Anyway, this one woman, she is our first ghost.
Okay.
She's dubbed the Lady in Blue. You want to guess why?
Yeah, I don't. No, I can't guess why.
Well.
She's sad. She's depressed. She plays the blues.
First, let me tell you why she was executed. She stabbed her husband and two children to death.
Okay.
And she was wearing a blue dress. And the blood got all over the blue dress. And they hanged her, like, immediately.
A lynch mob hang?
I guess. It sounds like a lynch mob.
Okay.
Sounds like it was right after the crime because she was hanged, still wearing her bloody blue dress.
All right.
And also, she gets the name from the color her skin turned after she died.
Okay.
So, cool. And it is said that she still haunts the saloon, and people have seen her a lot, just chilling, I guess.
In her dead form, or
in her dead form.
Okay.
Like in the bloody blue dress. So, then there is a different young woman who, during the Prohibition era, when the building was a speakeasy, a young woman entered the bar with her infant child.
Okay.
And she was looking for her husband.
Uh-huh.
I guess she was hoping not to find him. But she did. He was drunk and carousing. which you heard me loudly ask what it meant today.
And I think your mom took you to a bar when you were infant. I don't think she was looking for me, though. I think she just did it on a pub crawl. You weren't
drunk and carousing?
No, she was just doing it on a pub crawl. Sure.
Mom, why would you do that? The bar is no place for an infant.
It's a BC thing. Just trust me.
It's a BC. Anyway, so she found him drunk and carousing, and she had a mental breakdown.
Oh, no.
Took her baby into the ladies' room.
Oh, come on.
And killed it.
What did the baby do?
And hid it underneath a blanket in the bathroom and then left.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And the ladies' room is really haunted. So, let's talk about it. So, this one woman reported that she went into the bathroom and she tried to go into the first stall, but it was locked. So she went into the second stall, and then she noticed that there was nobody in the first stall. It was just locked, which, all right, that happens sometimes, whatever. Then, before leaving the bar, she went back, only to find the stall still locked. And before she even knew what was happening, the outside door to the restroom opened and closed, but she couldn't see anyone, like, there to open and close it. And then she went into the back stall, and she could hear the first stall, like, slam open and closed. Or, sorry, not closed. Unlock and, like, slam. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, she was, like, freaked out. So, she went to go see what was happening. Still, nobody was there. And the stall was, again, locked.
When did the woman kill her baby? What was that?
I don't know. Well, Prohibition.
Oh, sorry. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yeah. And then this sighting, I think, was pretty recent.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. There wouldn't have been a stall. Like, maybe there was. I don't know.
I feel like there might have been. Like, it could have been, like, she went into the stall
Her baby. I guess. I just don't know. Like, I was thinking of that exact, like, common modern stalls, but there must have been other different.
Some kind of stall.
That's freaky. Sense.
Yeah, pretty freaky.
Yeah.
Then there is the current owner of the bar. His name is Joe Farber.
Mm-hmm.
And so he considers himself a skeptic, but he's witnessed some things that he can't really explain. So, okay. Let's talk about them. So one night, Joe was alone in the bar, just like he was at his desk, probably like writing some stuff up, whatever. And it was about 4 a.m. And Joe heard a voice calling out to him. So he got up from his desk to investigate and noticed that the back doors were open when he knew he had locked them a couple hours before.
Mm-hmm.
But he investigated. Nothing else was, like, wrong. Everything was where it was supposed to be in the bar. He was all alone, so we brushed it off.
But somebody called his name out.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know if they called specifically his name, but they did call to him.
Okay.
Because...
Right. Could have been like, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, understood.
Because a year later, the voice called to him again, saying, don't leave.
As a warning?
Well, you're about to find out. So, Joe again ran to check the back door, but nothing was out of the ordinary. And so he investigated the whole bar again. Everything was fine. And so he just went home. However, at about 6 a.m., Joe got a call from the local police. They had found the body of a young teenage girl outside the bar who had completed suicide by overdosing on pills.
Oh.
Yeah. And Joe believes that the voice was trying to tell him not to leave.
So he could stop it?
So he could try to save her life. And he thinks that he could have saved her life if he had listened to the voice.
Okay.
Yeah, and the reason the police found the body was because, like, I think the girl, like, called her mom, like, right before she died. Like, after she had overdosed, but before she died. And then the mom called the police to go find her and stuff like that. So, very sad. But at least, like, it's a good spirit that's trying to look out for her.
Yeah, like, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So some of the more general stuff, cold spots are felt in the hallway near the ladies' room. Doors will open and close by themselves. One man got third-degree burns on his hand an hour after touching the hanging tree, which I assumed meant, like, it just appeared and not, like, an hour after touching the hanging tree, he stuck his hand in a stove or something like
no,
that.
No, I know what you mean. Like, it just, yeah, it's, yeah.
So that's kind of weird to me. But this historian I was telling you about, his name is Tom Hambright, and he thinks that the stories of Elvira and Reba are not true.
Okay.
And that they were made up by Captain Tony to get more customers. So this guy's name's Dave Lapham or Lapham, not quite sure. He writes for some kind of website called Ghost Hunting Florida.
Yeah.
And this is a quote from him about Captain Tony. He loved to tell a good story, and he made up a lot of them about the saloon. If a story went over and interested people, he'd keep embellishing it, dragging it out as long as possible. After all, if people were in his bar listening to his stories, they were also drinking. It was good for business. So that makes sense. So the historian, Hambright, also believes that the building was never actually a morgue or an ice house. He thinks that, well, basically, he says that there's no record of a morgue in Key West until, like, kind of recent times.
Okay.
And he also says that the walls are too thin to have been an ice house. But he also says, like, sometimes during natural disasters, buildings would, like, become temporary morgues. And that could have happened with Captain Tony's. Or, like, the walls could have changed over the years, something like that. I don't really know. But inconsistencies aside, many patrons have experienced strange and unexplainable things while inside the bar. So if you go on down to Captain Tony's, you'll see a lot of license plates on the, like, rafters.
Yep.
And bras hanging from the ceiling, and maybe you'll see a ghost.
Okay, then. Oh, good ghost stories. I like, I mean, the baby one freaked me out.
It's kind of creepy. But that's Captain Tony's Saloon.
Yeah, I never heard that before. I won't be going to Florida, so it doesn't matter.
You do have, like, your own personal vendetta against Florida.
No, just, eh.
Can I tell you the song that I chose?
Please do.
Last Mango in Paris, which is a Jimmy Buffett song.
And I don't know that one.
It references Captain Tony's Saloon.
Oh, cool. All right, there you go then.
Yeah.
And what is it called again?
The song?
Yeah.
Last Mango in Paris.
Oh, Last Mango. Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's a movie, you know, the
Last
movie.
Tango.
Yeah, okay. That, first I thought you said, all right.
Yeah. No. Right. Yeah.
Well, hey, cool. Well done.
Thank you.
So, my story is, it's an in-between, or it's a conjoined, because it's ghost and true crime.
Ooh.
Right.
You guys are lucky you're getting double ghosts this episode.
This one, well, I'll just get into it. I'll go through my sources and stuff like that as we get through it. But because we're
always make me feel so, like, bad for not telling my sources.
because we're in Maine for the week. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, let's just look at some local lore, that kind of thing. God. Just because it, you know, legends, whatever you can find around here.
Great idea. Amazing.
And I started my search with serial killers of Maine, just because,
oh,
you know, that would be the kind of thing. I guess, fortunately, there really aren't that many.
Yeah, in Maine. Don't think I've heard of that many.
There wasn't any that are specific to just Maine directly. But they definitely have their fair share of mass murderers. As well as just regular murder.
Wonderful.
But they do have some serial killers that hit the area, but didn't do most of their dirty work in Maine. So there's a few that they've counted, which then made me think, hey, I'm going to remember that one, because this is a story that I hadn't heard either, that, you know, I was like, oh, I didn't know about this one. So it's one that took place kind of in New England. But anyway, I was like, all right, that's interesting. But as I went through this and going through the murders and this and that, it got me down this path. And one of these stories caught my attention. The thing that was really interesting, though, was that in this search, and again, that other serial killer that I had read about, it talked about some other folks that not too far from where we are now, which is, you know, basically we're in like a lakes region area. But this one is a story that has, again, a little bit of everything. There's, of course, the murder. There's some, I want to say, witness tampering in a way. There's money, I believe, involved. Cemeteries, exhuming bodies from the cemetery more than once. Man-made lakes. And ghosts.
Wow, you had me at man-made lakes.
I thought so. This is the story of Sarah Ware.
Sarah Ware?
Yeah.
Sarah Ware.
So, we're going to talk about Bucksport, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
It's located in Hancock County.
Cool.
The town itself, it is just steeped in paranormal, ghosts, murder, and all these other things. And it starts with its founder. So, Colonel John Buck surveyed the land back in 1762. And at the time, again, Maine was part of Massachusetts. So there's a bunch of people that were like, hey, yeah, you go out there, go take a look at the place. And he went out and did this. When they were doing some of this work, what they had found, and I'm not saying they found it, but archaeologists in time found out that the first inhabitants to that area was 5,000 years ago, and they were called the Red Paint People. Later, they were called the Maritime Archaic, but they were a very advanced fishing culture, and they were called the Red Paint People because they buried their dead with red paint, tools, and weapons. Later, the Tarratine Abenaki Native Americans lived in this area. I think later they were called Penobscot, the Penobscot tribe. But in 1763, so a year later, Buck returned to this area that he surveyed, and he started to settle the area, and they just called it Plantation One.
So creative.
He built a sawmill, his home, and a general store. By 1775, the plantation had grown to about 21 families. And a whole bunch of other history went through. As time went on, during the Revolutionary War, it was actually, I think... the British did take over because it was a port coming into the main area, and they used it and held it for a long, long time. And then after the war, I believe they called it Buckstown.
Huh.
And then later in the 1800s, they changed it to Bucksport because there was a port right there. But, and then the war of 1812, the British again invaded and took it over. So,
oh, no.
And what they did is, I think that original group of families, they almost killed them all unless they, or they maybe they imprisoned them, whatever, unless you swore allegiance to the crown during the Revolutionary War, you were allowed to either survive. I don't know. But in that time though, before the war, Buck had a mistress that he thought was a witch, and he burned her.
Why?
And she swore that she would come back and dance on his grave.
Yeah, good.
So here's the weirdest thing. Buck's tombstone has had a foot and a leg imprint appear on its tombstone, and they have replaced it multiple times, and every time a leg and a foot reappears.
What do you mean?
On the tombstone.
Like the headstone itself?
Yes.
Like now, the image?
Yeah, like imprinted in it. Now, it could just be people, you know, vandalizing it, right? And doing it that. But it's happened every time, I think at least 3 times.
Whoa, I hope they just leave it be now.
I think so. And there's some other stories that I'm not going to get into about this town. But that's not even what we're talking about. This is just the history of Bucksport.
Wow.
In the late 1920s, Central Maine Power wanted to build a hydroelectric plant. And the townspeople were totally against it. So they were actually thinking, like, we don't want to become like Massachusetts. So apparently, I guess they were selling electricity and things like that. So as a compromise, Central Maine Power said, hey, look, I'll tell you what, we'll build a paper mill instead that will use this hydroelectric plant to power itself. So at least a third of that power is going to this, and it's going to create jobs and all these other things.
Interesting.
And you know, how's that for a compromise? And they were, okay, fine, we'll do that. So they built the mill, and they, to do it, they had a dam, a river further up, and that created a man-made lake.
Oh, cool.
So that man-made lake would then, that water would actually use to like run the turbines.
Ooh,
and everything like that.
Man-made lakes.
See, I knew you were waiting for that.
Yeah, it's my favorite part.
The man-made lake was called Silver Lake, and it covers, it still exists today, it covers 682 acres and has a maximum depth of 33 feet. So it's not really a deep, like...
No, it's pretty...
But within those 682 acres to when it before it was a lake, was forest, homes, and a cemetery. So they had to cut down forests.
Wait, the lake is above, like over the cemetery?
Yes.
Oh. So
the homeowners like... had to sell their land, you know, sell, like forced to sell their land. And the cemetery that was there, all the dead were moved to a new location, to the Oak Hill Cemetery.
Okay.
However,
oh,
one body
was left.
A headless one is believed to not have been removed.
Because it still haunts the area?
Now, the lake has been stocked with fish. They have built, it's a very popular spot for fishing. They also built hiking trails around there, beginner and intermediate, so lots of people are always around.
Right.
And immediately after all this had happened, and they built all these things.
Sightings.
Yes.
Oh, man.
So people either fishing or hiking had seen the body of a headless woman just roaming the area.
Like walking?
Some said maybe hovering over the lake.
Ooh.
Some just said always hovering.
Oh my God.
She has been seen either early in the morning hours or seen during cold, rainy evenings through thick fog. And people just claim that she's searching for something.
Her head. How's she going to find it if she got no eyes?
Well, the woman in question, of course, is based on a real person.
Ooh.
Sarah Ware.
Sarah
was born in 1846 in Nova Scotia, in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
She met the love of her life, and I'm not sure where, if it was in Canada or if she was visiting the States or something like that, but either way, she moved to Maine.
Okay.
She had children. She had a daughter. I think she also had a son, but her daughter was more involved with her, with the family. But the marriage really didn't last, and she was divorced, and she then raised her children pretty much by herself. Now, I don't know what happened with her husband, but I do think he was still... around, like he didn't like just get up and leave kind of thing. So I think he was around the kids because, and I'll explain when I go a little bit further. Now, to raise her children, it took a bit of money, and she didn't, you know, she didn't like have a job or anything like that. So she just did all sorts of odd jobs, and to make ends meet, she was cleaning. She was.
I was just imagining. Like Tati.
Oh, jeez.
From Loza Spookies.
Yeah.
She's just breaking in other people's
shoes. She wasn't
shoes.
Breaking shoes. No. She didn't get into the herbal.
Selling, what was that drink called again?
I can't remember.
Herbalite.
Was it Herbalite?
Herbalite.
Something like that. But she ended up doing, you know, basically she was like a cleaning lady, or she did babysitting all the time. And she also was a nanny for like when she got a long-term gig. On September 17th, 1898, she was walking home after from a friend's house.
Mm-hmm.
And on her walk home, she stopped by this general store and she bought...
Nope, bad idea. Never do anything ever.
And she was doing it right before closing, and she just bought like a cigarillo, like a thin cigarette kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the store owner knew who she was because she did this a lot coming late. And they believed that, you know, she would be coming home from either like a late babysitting job or something like that. So they didn't think anything else of it or anything like that. And on her way home, she would then collect money for all the, from all her clients. So she's walking down this stretch of road, and she's just, you know, basically picking up money for cleaning, picking up money for babysitting, whatever it may be. And
well,
she just
got good. Now she has a bunch of money on her.
Right. And I don't know how many places she collected, but I mean, it wasn't like a huge strip of houses, but assume it's between, I think, maybe 8 to 10 mm-hmm. homes. It would be the last time she was seen alive.
Oh.
It would take almost a week before anybody reported her missing.
Wow. But she's doing all these odd jobs. Shouldn't everyone know who she is?
Well, apparently it wasn't until people are like, why isn't my house clean? Or why isn't somebody babysitting? Like, oh, wait, where's Sarah? And that's when they basically went to her home and found that she wasn't there. Things were...
Like nothing as, was, yeah. as they were.
Right. She had just disappeared. Right. So the investigation then ramped up, and they started searching her house and her belongings, and they found that like her cash was missing. So she had a lot of cash because, you know, she was walking home collecting all these things. So she had
made it home.
Well, they couldn't find any money. Like, they just were like, there's no money in her house.
Anything that she like saved up at her house was gone too.
So yeah, so there was no, it wasn't like it was ransacked. It was just that.
It was gone.
There was nothing. No money there that she would have kept. And they said that she, you know.
Stockpiled.
She did. And it wasn't that she was rich and wealthy because, again, to do the jobs. But she did make good money for what she did because she worked all hours. I mean, they were saying it could have been anywhere close to 18-hour days and that kind of thing.
Whoa.
So what was getting interesting, though, was that after a while and in the town, it was gossip that kind of got going of like, oh, well, you know, what happened? Did she run? Wait, did she meet somebody, this or that kind of thing? And then there was another group of people like going, I think something bad has happened, we need to figure it out. So
good for
it
them.
It took them some time to get a search party. So within a week of her missing, that next week they're now looking, and they are coming to a dead end everywhere, like just nothing, can't find anything. And then on October 2nd, so a couple weeks after her going missing, and this is a quote from the search party, they smelled her before they saw her.
The whole search party in unison?
I don't know who.
The quote from the search party. Sorry. Very sad. Continue.
She was found less than a mile from her home on Mills Lane, which is currently the high school parking lot.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
A raincoat was tucked up like a pillow underneath her nearly severed head.
Ooh.
A knife with a ragged and serrated edge was that, of course, was used on her, was found by her body. So they put her body in a wagon, and they really couldn't even tell her face. Like, animals had actually gotten to her face.
Oh, gross.
But they put the body in the wagon to get her back to have an autopsy at the coroner's mm-hmm. office. As they're riding,
the head falls off?
The head completely comes off because of the bumps in the road and... is now separated from her body.
But they didn't go back and get it? They didn't realize?
No. They have the body. It was in the wagon because it was almost completely decapitated. Oh,
I was thinking like wheelbarrow kind of where it just rolled
off. Oh, no. It was like a wagon, like a wagon.
Got it. Continue.
So during the autopsy, the coroner found that she had blunt force trauma to her head.
Oof.
And like a hole in her skull.
Ooh.
So she died by that. She didn't die from... So they think the cutting of the head went
Were they
toast.
Trying to like dismember her or something?
It could have been. The cut definitely was. That head was post-mortem.
That's good, at least.
So oddly, though, after the body had been found and now is at the coroner's office and all the stuff's coming out, they, you know, again started searching again for other clues. And they went back to her house and they found all the money. It was at the house. Yeah. Everything. The money was... all that money that went missing.
Do you think her killer is like part of the search party or something? And then they were like, oh, the money's gone. And then
they put it back. She had her purse on her when they found the body too. And it had just some of it? There was no money in the purse.
Nothing.
No.
Interesting.
So, of course, rumors again start to swirl around, right? It's, you know... Did somebody owe Sarah money? Did they know where Sarah kept money? You know, what was going on? Like, somehow in this whole grand scheme of things, they just thought, like, this had to be somebody that had a debt Because the other thing is that I guess Sarah also was, she loaned people money, mm-hmm. and because she could, she just, because she was in a hard time, so she did that as well. So they were all now wondering that what's going on. So immediately,
it's nice that they like care this much. Like, because I feel like we hear a lot of stories about people that are murdered that people don't care about because they're not like as important.
Right. Well,
like babysitting and stuff, that's like important, obviously, but it's interesting.
That I think there are two sides here, right? There's, I don't know if this town, I don't think it was, it's, it was it crazy affluent. There may have been like a mix of like, there are the, you know, the haves and then the have nots, right? And she may have been on the have not side, but maybe she was kind of like helping other have nots when they were down and out, that kind of thing. But there was definitely a contingency of richer people.
Right.
So now the investigation focused on who were her clients. So they start basically piecing together that where was she the night, the last time she had seen the store owner said, well, I remember seeing her that night. And that's when everybody was like, yeah, I think that was the last night that she had been seen. So they traced down that path and hit every house and basically was asking, you know, bang, bang, bang. They went down, they went down. And when they got down to the one house on this path, it was basically comes to a T and there's a house right there. And they believed was the last place that she probably went to collect, because then after that there weren't houses and she would just gone home.
Right.
The person who lived at that home was one William Trewergy. I don't know how I'll say it. Trewergy. Trewergy. Trewergy, but Trewergy. He was not well liked in town. He was a very ill-tempered person. He was divorced.
Was he like a Scrooge?
I don't know. Yeah, well, yeah. Actually, yeah. Because he was divorced. He had two children. Sarah had been a nanny for him for a long period of time and did not pay her.
He didn't pay her?
No. And it was found that he was one to stiff people that he owed money to. So again, his house was that last one, and they decided they were going to do some more of a search. On November 27th, they searched his wagon, and they found a bloody tarp and a hammer with WTT engraved on it.
Wow.
The hammer's nose, you know, was the identical size of the hole in her head. So the next day,
and then they found a diary that said, I did it, right next to that.
Well, the next day, it was expected they would arrest Trewergy. However, in those days, the way the towns worked for detective work and things like that, they actually had to, the expenses and everything paid for a couple detectives was all done, you know, through the town, this and that. And the town funds just dried up. They didn't have the money get detectives.
Come on.
So
how about they just like pull the town namesake who just burned his mistress? Why don't they just burn this guy?
Again, this happens. So time kind of is passing, but the townsfolk again band together and raise $500. And that would be about $3,000, I think, today to get and hire two detectives to basically investigate this case and bring charges, right? So time goes on still. So we're now kind of in the winter, right? It would be the spring of the next year that they get a break in the case.
The case has been broken for like a year.
Yeah, they have the buddy, this, that, but I don't know if they have forensics, like it was his handprint, this, that. I mean, yes, there's circumstantial evidence, this and that.
I suppose.
Well, a witness comes forward, Joe Fogg Jr., saying that he was paid by Trewergy to move Sarah's body to Mills Lane. So they are ready they're going to arrest him, right? Now, during this time, right, from the 27th to like the spring, Sarah's body had been buried in a local cemetery. And however, her head was not.
What?
They kept the head for forensic reasons.
Oh.
So it was kept as, you know, evidence.
Got it.
But they had exhumed her body again after the fog had come forward to look at it. And then they're all ready now to deal with Trewergy. Well, The case then hits a wall because Trawergi's attorneys are arguing that he cannot get a fair trial due to the small town, people knowing him, the prejudices against him. And it did go national. Like, Boston read about it. It was like a pretty big thing when this when they found this. So,
okay, then just move it where, just a different small town.
It would be 3 years of arguing where this venue would be and how, and determining something that was safe, you know, or fair, I should say safe. In that time, Sarah's body was reburied in that Bucksport grave. Later, her daughter would exhume that body because people were like basically, I don't want to say grave robbers, but you know, the headless body, people would be.
They want to like see it?
Yeah, or dig it up, that kind of thing. So she took it. I don't know how she did it, but she moved it without really anyone knowing.
Oh my God, that's got to be so horrible for her.
And she moved it to the Oak Hill Cemetery.
Oh.
To be closer to her, because that's where she lived. Again, it's still relatively in the same area. And to stop from people, you know, congregating at that grave. So in that time, like, you know, all this is going on, these 3 years, also all of a sudden, all the murder weapons, the tarp, the hammer, disappear.
How?
Just disappear. And now the witness, Fogg Jr., recants his story.
No.
That he was bullied by police, that there was the selectmen just wanted it. They had a gripe against Trawergi.
Oh.
So the charges against Trawergi would be dropped and the case goes cold.
God, no.
So when Silver Lake was created, they had to move the graves from the Oak Hill Cemetery.
Right. Wait, so if all the murder weapons are disappearing, the body's been buried somewhere else, what happened to the head?
Glad you asked. In 1998, Sarah's head, which has been held as evidence in Ellsworth County Courthouse since 1898, you know, 100 years, would be returned to Sarah at the Oak Hill Cemetery.
Did the sightings stop?
Hmm?
Did the sightings stop after that?
Well, when Sarah's daughter had moved her headless body in that unmarked grave, because she didn't want people
to another unmarked grave.
I should have said that. She moved her headless body to an unmarked grave. My mistake.
So they don't know where the body is?
So when they were moving the bodies from the cemetery that was in Silver Lake.
Uh-huh.
I mean, not Silver Lake.
It
was Silver Lake. I should go back. She moved her body to Oak Hill Cemetery. My mistake. And then they moved it to Silver Lake Cemetery. So Oak Hill was where the cemetery was. So when I was saying in 1998, they wanted to move Sarah's head. Uh-huh. It wasn't to Oak Hill. It was to Silver Lake because that's where
the new cemetery
was. Okay. Right. So
that's where they moved all the bodies. And one of those bodies is the unmarked. But they didn't move it.
So here's what I
forgot about that.
Right.
It's
so,
still there.
So when they went to go put that head in the Silver Lake Cemetery, they realized that where Sarah's body was, there was a headstone there for her.
Oh, they put one there.
They put one when they moved them.
But they didn't have the body?
Well, when they went there, the rumor is that when they buried the head, there was no body there, just a tombstone, because they placed a tombstone next to the rest of her family. So when the daughter died and everything else, they made a tombstone. So what is believed is that the tombstone may have happened a lot later.
Right.
They just didn't know, but
they just like meant to put it there.
Right. So one story is that they just said, hey, 1998, we're just going to put the body, and we're going to create a tombstone for Sarah.
Shoot.
We don't have the rest of the body. It's just the head. Because when her daughter moved the body to the cemetery,
it was unmarked
because she didn't want anybody trying to grave rob that body.
And then when they tried to move the cemetery, they didn't know where the body was.
They only moved gravestones.
Yeah.
Right. So. So.
So I guess if you see this ghost, just be like, hey, I know where your head is.
So in 98.
She won't be able
there
to
is,
you.
I told you, like, there is a grave marker, but they believe the only thing in there is the skull of Sarah Ware. So it is claimed that Sarah Ware can be seen wandering the shores of Silver Lake in the midst of the moonlight night.
Wow.
Most sightings are around her disappearance in mid-September, September 17th.
Are we going to be up here September 17th?
I don't think so. And if you do see her, she's only seeking one or two things. Justice and probably her missing head.
Yeah.
And not to start you, Sarah Ware.
I had no idea about any of that. That's insane.
I feel like I screwed up that part with the cemetery stuff. That's but, you okay. know.
I mean, I screwed up the part with the sloppy joes.
So just to be clear, when they moved, when the sister moved the body to the cemetery, it was called at that time the Oak Hill Cemetery. When Silver Lake was created, they moved Oak Hill and they created a Silver Lake Cemetery with all the people that were that had headstones and named to Silver Lake Cemetery. But if you go to Silver Lake Cemetery, which is on the, not the shores, but right on the outskirts of Silver Lake, there is a whole bunch of gravestones for the Ware family, her daughter, her in-laws, I believe even her ex-husband. So there is a headstone there. But rumor is it's just her skull.
We should go see it.
Maybe. But there you go.
That was really good.
Cool.
Wow.
So I'm going to do the fun fact. But before I do, I just want to say that I forgot to give my...
your sources,
but I just and you know Wikipedia was in there, and there was a news station that did something, but the one I do want to say is there's a librarian from the Bucks Memorial Library, I think his name's Emric Spooner, he's written I think a couple books on this, so a lot of the stuff where I found these sites basically reference him and credit him, so he should get lots of the credit because I think he did a lot of the research for all these things. So
yeah,
just so you know. Nice. All right, so the fun fact is, Bucksport is depicted in the 1960s ABC television series Dark Shadows, most prominently in the 1840 time period, as located near the fictional town of Collinsport. So Collinsport is basically based on Bucksport, and the whole storyline takes place, and they just because of the witch and everything else
of the
mistress. Well, they made a movie of it with Johnny Depp, and it is about and there's a witch involved. So there's like about, you know, all supernatural beings like vampires and witches and all these other things. But Bucksport is the town that the show Dark Shadows is based on.
Interesting.
So there you go.
That's a good fun fact.
Mm-hmm. That was actually in the Wikipedia thing, and as I was going through, I'm like, hey, wait a minute, I'm just gonna hold this one for the end.
Yeah.
I know we've gotten a couple.
That's what I did with my Elizabeth Bathory. I think
that's true.
I actually don't remember if I used it as a fun fact. I don't remember. I think I did.
You may have, yeah. But we have got some more that we're gonna use now.
Some people have submitted them, so
which is kind of cool.
Expect some in the coming episodes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's get into the spiel
that everyone listens to.
Everybody listens to
That's
it,
right.
Obviously. I'm going to quiz you all next time.
You quiz me, I'd still fail because I...
Okay, what's our email?
I know that because I... everythinginpodcast@gmail.com.
Woo! What's our Twitter?
I have no idea. And the sad part is I can't even remember our Insta. Is our Insta everything in?
Yes, everything in podcast.
Everything in podcast. Okay, cool. You know what we should do, though? We should, like, make a hash, like, EIB, DDP. Everything DDP. In between.
Dad, daughter, pod. Yeah. That's a lot of letters.
Yeah, I know, but it would be easier to say. Eib-dip. Yeah, well, I'm not
support
saying
eib-dip.
You don't have to, like, phonetically say it there, so.
Eib-dip.
Okay.
Anyway. So
we've done our Insta now and our Gmail, so let's go.
Yes. Our Twitter is @between_podcast. I might change it at this point to see if I can match it. But then
into everything in podcast.
Yeah,
I think you should just do.
But
that.
Then everybody for 45 other episodes is going to be like, "Where's our Twitter? They said that it was this." So maybe we could go back and record something to put in there.
Yeah, I guess we could. It. Yeah.
Anyway, that's our Twitter. We have a Facebook group and a Facebook page called Everything In Between Podcast, both the group and the page, and. Also, if you're submitting your fun facts or story suggestions, or you've got stories for us that you experienced, you can send them to our email, which I just quizzed my wonderful father on, or you can submit them through our website, which is...
I'm sorry, I'm drinking. I
Can't you're I, not drinking. You're just getting it right. Our website is www.everythingpodcast.weebly.com.
I just remember the Weebly part.
Wonderful. You remember the easiest part.
Okay.
Good. Good job.
I thought the websites were just for the old people like myself.
Well, I used to post pictures on them, but people don't seem to care. No, I stopped.
I think it's just easier because people just kind of like, you know.
Easier to listen than to like,
listen and go then, to the website. Yeah, go to the Insta because Insta has the.
Maybe we'll start posting pictures on our Insta. That would be a good idea.
You're killing me, Smalls.
What?
That's what I thought we were supposed to be doing. But anyway, no. Keep going.
Anyway, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, this is like the longest outro ever. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please, please rate, review, and subscribe. Really, really helps. And we have a Spotify playlist of all the songs that we use for our episode titles. So it's called the Soundtrack In Between. And this week you can hear some Jimmy Buffett. And you didn't tell me your song.
Yeah, mine is an archaic band that I'm not, the band's called Rainbow. And the song's called Lady of the Lake.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. It's very King Arthur-ish, though, I think. It's like, it was that time of the... Lady of the Lake. It was like the 70s when like Zeppelin was doing all the Tolkien things. And this was probably them saying, hey, we gotta stick with them. Let's do this.
Oh, so, those were the days.
The medieval times. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, I just remembered something that's going to make this outro a lot longer, but I think it's worth it. Would you like to tell our adoring fans what you did to me today with Spotify?
So I can see like my friends' activity. So I get to see what friends are listening to. So Emma was listening on her headphones while we were doing each other. Like we were researching our stories. So as she was going through, I just played on my Spotify and I had it on the outspeaker.
The song that I had just listened to.
Yeah. And she was like, how do you, and I just kept doing it, but I'll give her credit. By the second song, she's like, how do you know what I'm listening to?
Well, so. I knew because it was a song by King Princess, which if you don't know, she's a very like new artist that you would never listen to in a million years. And
that's fair.
Like when it came on the speaker, I was like, okay, you know. I got very angry, but it was very funny. So yeah, friends, do that to your other friends. Yeah, I think that's it. Follow the directions that we just told you. I think that's it.
Yeah. And we're here for the week. So we'll be doing, I'm not sure. Either we'll be recording here or we'll at least have our stories done, but we'll hopefully have some more main stories by the next episode.
I feel like you're making me do a main story.
Well, maybe we have a main adventure that like Rennie's.
Like Rennie's. Rennie's, the main adventure. Please sponsor us.
Yeah.
anyway, that's it. See you next week.
See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.